We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
To Red Ice Creations Radio, this is Henrik Palmgren coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. New or regular listeners, welcome. Nice to have you with us today. The website is redicecreations.com, and this is the place where you can find our radio archives, our news section, and of course our members section. Now, I had up on redicecreations.com about a week ago, I guess it is, a very interesting article called New World Order Astrologers, about Louis de Waal and also about Hitler and Churchill and their interest in the occult. And we have with us today on the line the author to that article, T. Stokes is with us. Some very interesting writing he's behind, and he's been writing a lot about World War II, about Red or, you know, communist spies, basically the CIA, the connection to Satanism, actually. And he also is a lecturer. He's very into palmistry and a whole lot more. We're going to begin today to discuss his article that I had up on the website, and then we'll see if there are further avenues that we can explore together with T. Stokes here today. I want to mention the website also before we begin, so we can take a look at that. It's www.t-stokes.co.uk. So head on over there and take a look. So, okay, let's bring on our guest. Welcome to the program, Mr. Stokes. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Henrik. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming on. We're very glad to have you. You know, I would like to begin today to talk a little bit about your background. I'm not sure that many people out there are familiar with you or your work. I've been certainly coming across a lot of your articles out there on the web, and many people listening might have too. But I'd like to know kind of how long you've been researching these kinds of subjects and what, you know, basically what some of your more general background into these areas are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as a young boy, I lived in a haunted house. Now, children that grow up in haunted houses, they become psychically aware very early. And that was certainly the case with me. And with a child, they don't question. An adult will question what they're seeing, and they'll tend to rationalize it away. But as a child, I saw things and I experienced things. And this stood me in very good stead as I was getting older. And I'm very curious. And I wanted to know exactly what it was I was seeing and feeling and experiencing in this haunted house. And so this led me into a lot of studies into the supernatural and the occult. Now, because I've lectured a lot in this sort of thing, I'm always being asked for articles for different sort of sites and magazines and so on. And mostly I'm sort of only too happy to do that. You know, I sort of think, well, I was lucky that I have had an education in these matters, and I try and sort of share it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of my supernatural side, and this is the side that I'm best known for.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the article that you mentioned. I've also researched very deeply the truth about things like World War II. And the thing you have to understand is that most history books that we read in schools and colleges, they're not the truth. They're built on lies. There's so much that we understand that is wrong.
Yeah.
For instance, the British, we were taught that Sir Francis Drake was one of England's greatest patriots. And he was knighted for his work for Britain. But if you look at the history of places like Spain, he is seen as a pirate and a murderer. Hmm. So which one is true there? Which one is true? And when you mention World War II, if you look at the recent case of the war in Iraq, the British people said no. The intelligence services said no. Even the British government said no. Mm. Tony Blair, on his own, with his financial backers, said yes.
Yep.
It was exactly the same in World War II. It was the same scenario. It's often said in intelligence circles that the first casualty of war is truth. But before a government can declare war, it must first of all declare war on its own people. There is a propaganda war. They build up racial hatred. A lot of the stuff that I've had, I went into nursing homes for years, and I sometimes spent a lot of time talking with people who were at the cutting edge during the war, in intelligence and things like this. And some of the things they told me shook me rigid. You know, it's just like the war in Iraq. World War II is just a bunch of lies. In order to get the people to go and fight, they have to whip you up. They whip you up to a frenzy. And if you remember with it, in Iraq, the situation there, Tony Blair told us that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction that he could unleash on us in 45 minutes. Hmm. Now we know it was rubbish.
That's right.
Exactly the same with World War II. The case there with Rudolf Hess is a classic instance there. I spoke to a very senior man at a Freemasonry meeting many years ago. This old boy sat by the fire, and I was introduced to him, and he was one of the guards at Spandau Prison. And he said to me, he said, if you believe the history books, he said, they tell us, he said, that Rudolf Hess, he said, the second most powerful man in Germany, he said he was guarded 24 hours a day. He said he could not even go to the toilet on his own. He said, we are told, he said he slipped away from those bodyguards. He said he went to an airfield. He said he got onto the airfield, he said, without being challenged. He said he was one of the most recognizable men in the country. He said, but nobody stopped him. He said he stole an aircraft, he said, according to the books. He said he bolted on extra large fuel tanks. He said nobody said anything. He said he stole that aircraft. He said warmed up the engines for 20 minutes. Nobody crossed the airfield and said, what are you doing? He said an airfield, he said he guarded in times of war. He said if you try to go onto an airfield, he said you are shot. He said, but we are told that Rudolf Hess stole this plane. He said Britain was at war with Germany. Mm-hmm. He said there were no maps. He said, but we are told that Hess flew across, he said, flew around Britain, he said, without being shot down. He says, and I said, well, what is it that you're telling me? I said, what are you trying to say to me? He said, the business with Rudolf Hess, he said, it was an MI6 sting operation. He said, we were negotiating with Hitler, he said, secretly, the whole way through the war. He said, and we lured him across, he said, on the pretext of peace. He said, then, he said, when we got him, he said, we said to Hitler, no, you will not have your peace. And we told some terrible lies. We knew all along that the Katyn Forest murders were the work of the Soviets, but we lied to our own people. There's a lot of stuff here that is absolutely evil. Churchill's bombing of Dormitory Town. This is so wrong. This is so wrong. And things like this, they need readdressing. They need someone now to sort of say, hey, look, you know, we want the truth now. It's long enough after the event whereby the truth should come out.
Yeah.
And I was actually a whistleblower. I actually whistleblew on a lot of what I knew. I was very, very junior, but I spoke to a lot of very senior men. And some of the things that I learned about the war, they turned my stomach over.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I'll just tell you one thing.
Sure.
We in Britain, we were told that Hitler was this awful man who was going to come across and bomb us. But Hitler had this thing about the Aryan race. That's just three nations, Germany, Britain, and the USA. He had no intention of going to war with Britain. And exactly as he says in Mein Kampf, he's the only politician ever to write his manifesto before he came to power. And he said that his war was with the Soviet Union. Now, I'll tell you something else. And I've researched the intelligence archives here. In the 1930s, we had saturation coverage of the Third Reich. We had AIPs, which are agents in place. We had them right through the Third Reich, and we knew absolutely everything was going on. And the Germans were no threat to us. And in fact, the head of naval intelligence, Admiral Barry Domvile, was actually imprisoned for the duration of the war for saying, look, the Germans are no threat to us, but they are to the Soviets. Now, if you look at the situation in Britain in the 30s, all our universities were rotten to the core with Soviet agents. Mm. They were in the mines, all the factories. They had, the whole country was rotten with Soviet agents. We had very, very few German agents, you know. And yet, the situation was changed where we went to war with Germany and not the Soviets. And the intelligence agencies all along said, our real enemies, the real danger to us was from the Soviets. And this was proved during the Cold War, after the war.
Mm.
There's another major lie here, Henrik, which needs addressing.
Mm.
And this is the fact that all our history books still teach us that we went to war because of Poland. You see? Under the Nazi Soviet pact, the Russians took the other half of Poland and we assisted them. So how can we go to war with Germany because they've taken half of Poland and you assist the Soviets in their taking of the other half? Are you with me?
Exactly, yep, yep.
I have no loyalties in any particular direction except for the truth.
Hmm.
You know, I'm a patriot. I'm a patriotic guy. But I feel now that it's long enough after the event. And funny enough, it was one of the major spies of the war, Sir Anthony Blunt. And he told us some things there which at the time I didn't believe. And I've sorted this out with sort of other sort of senior men there. And I really believe now that Britain should have kept out of the war. And a lot of things that Churchill did, there was an agreement with Hitler that they would not bomb the people. But what happened, the situation was the British bombing was so poor that Churchill went against the agreement and he was bombing the German people.
Mm.
Of course, Hitler retaliated. Okay.
Very interesting. Yeah, definitely so much there to pick up on. You know, I actually have to pick up on one of that right away, one of those things right away. I have actually a quote on my website, and I'm not sure actually of the source of this, and maybe you can confirm it, or I've heard it before, but it is from Winston Churchill, and it goes like this. You must understand that this war, he's talking about World War II now then, is not against Hitler or National Socialism, but against the strength of the German people, which is to be smashed once and for all, regardless whether it is in the hands of Hitler or a Jesuit priest. Have you heard about that before?
Yes, I have, yes, yeah. You have to understand who Churchill really was. If you read the Churchill papers, in intelligence terminology, they are what's called weeded and vetted, which means to say anything a little bit risque is taken out. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The real Churchill was a man who was steeped in the occult, steeped in it. And they've had to do a lot of revisionism in order to edit that out. Now, Churchill, he endeared himself to Londoners by coming out to where places had been bombed. But we had broken the Enigma codes, so we knew where it was safe for him to be and when it wasn't. So there was no risk there on his part.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was too drunk to go, there was a chap called Norman Shelley, who was an actor, and he used to take his place.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So are you talking about...
Churchill's speeches weren't actually given by Churchill.
Mm-hmm. So are you talking about an actor? He was a doppelganger here, or...?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Churchill had several doppelgangers.
Hmm.
And one of whom was sort of Norman Shelley. You see, my problem, Henrik, is that I don't feel there was any need to lie. It's the lies that I think that are so wrong.
Hmm.
Are you with me?
Yeah, definitely.
And if you look, even the news today, you watch the news, and if you have an understanding of things, it's slanted, it's biased. You know?
Yep.
You know, the people that we're treated like children. We regularly hear that it is dumbed down, and it is dumbed down.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel that it's like with all these UFO sightings. For years, the government would decry people, and they'd say it's nonsense. But now they're coming clean now, and because they have to. They're having to tell the truth now. And it turns out that some of these people and the sightings they saw were right all along.
Hmm. That's interesting. I mean, why do you think they have to, you know, come clean now?
I don't think they did have to. And I don't think the government should ever lie. is the situation in Britain now is that politics is a dirty word. You know, nobody goes to vote in Britain because it's like you have one politician or another one, mm-hmm. and you hear people saying, well, what do you want, heart disease or cancer? I don't want either one of them. In America, there is a guy called Ron Paul.
Yep.
And Ron Paul, he is the no-sleaze candidate, and the people are going mad for him. People are going mad for him. If you look at people like Hillary Clinton, they have a big money behind them. Now, people don't invest big money unless there's something in it for them.
That's
and when
right.
you buy your candidate, you dictate their policies.
I mean, just look at the, I mean, to pick up on the Ron Paul thing there, I mean, exactly, I totally agree. There's so many people that seem to be supporting him. At least that's the feel you get of it from the internet, if you're monitoring that, so to speak. But just look at the vote, you know, the voters that is going on over there, and it seems to be fraud on you know, for those who are into this and looking at this, they're counting the ballots and the recounts and stuff
like
this.
We've had it over here. But, I mean, there's so much in the way of sort of voter fraud that that is done.
Yeah.
There's a site that I write a lot of conspiracy stuff for, and that's called the Truth Seekers site. Truth Seekers Co.UK. Very, very good. And I also put some paranormal stuff on various sites, but Seekers of Spirit Co.UK. I put a lot of sort of paranormal and sort of spiritual stuff on there.
Right at the beginning, you mentioned that you were at a meeting in a Freemasonic environment, so to speak.
Yeah.
Are you a Freemason yourself?
I used to have very close dealings with the very, very top Freemasons. Now, some of these are wonderful men who will did a lot of charity work and who had the welfare of their fellow men at heart. But wherever you get a group of men, there'll always be someone who will lead. And I'm very suspicious of. I'll just give you one instance here. When Harold Wilson was Prime Minister, there was a flap because his shoe repair man found a bug in the heel of his brogues. Okay, now they didn't know whether this was a Soviet bug or whether they didn't know who it was. But Wilson, he was, let me say, he was very Soviet friendly. You see. So what then happened was there was a meeting, and I can vouch for this because I know people who were at that meeting, between the Freemasons in the army, in the police, in the, for all the major services, they all met, and they discussed the words were put to me, and I'll tell you the exact words that were put to me. This guy said, he said, we held a contingency meeting. He said, and we made plans, he said, if we had to take over from Britain, he said, and we were going to ask Lord Mountbatten, he said, to be the figurehead, he said. Now, Lord Mountbatten is a guy who has very close connections to Rothschilds. And Rothschilds financed both sides during World War II. Rothschild syndicates. And you can research them on the net, and you can sort of see about the Rothschilds.
Exactly. Yeah, there has been written a lot about that, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was kind of one idea when you talk so much about World War II, that you know, we have this idea that there are people up on the top that are financially gaining from this, and because of political interests
That's what it's all about. There was a very good friend of mine died 2 years ago, Rabbi Dr. Louis Jacobs. Now, he during the Cold War, I had a bit to do with Louis Jacobs, and he was a very fair-minded man. He was a very moderate rabbi, and he told us a lot of very interesting stuff about funding and about usury. But what you have to remember is that we're told Britain won World War II. We were paying back the international banks till the end of 2006, the interest and so on, you know. So you have to sort of say, well, you know, there's no sign that Britain has won.
Well, exactly. Who has won?
You can't say someone has won when they are financially crippled.
Exactly. Especially when so many people, too, are lost in a war. I mean, both World War One and World War II, Britain lost a lot of, you know, young men, basically, you know?
Yeah. Well, we all did. But, I mean, there's this idea that we won the war, but Britain came out bombed, blitzed, and bankrupt. So, I mean, I don't think we won at all. I think the bankers won. I think international bankers won because they bankrolled both sides.
Exactly. Sheesh, oh my God. And then, of course, you know, you have the agenda of if we're talking about, for instance, Gordon Brown. Now, his recent, what he has been talking about on the Economic Forum meeting down in Davos, you know, he's talking very much about the globalization of the world, not only economically, but also through, you know, Europe and so forth. And that is one agenda that is kind of running alongside the economic one also, of course, that they don't want the nations to be left anymore. They want to have a global society now, right?
Well, they do. They do want to have a society. If you look, the idea is for one world government, one police force, one religion, one political ideal, and it's unhealthy. And in Britain, they're trying to bring in ID cards. There's a lot of public resistance to this. But, you know, the ID cards, it's just another means of control.
Exactly.
You know? And it amused me because one of the reasons they said we went into Iraq was for to bring democracy to them. Well, all the time they're eroding democracy in Britain and in America too.
Yeah.
They're stealing our democracy by the day. Do you know, when Tony Blair was in power over that 10 years, his wife was a lawyer, and her company, Matrix Chambers, brought in one law change almost every day.
Really?
So they are stealing our rights as people. They're eroding our freedoms, and yet we went into Iraq to give them democracy. I don't think so. Do you, Hendrik?
No, I don't think so. It's a totally different agenda, and what that might be is also in itself actually very, very interesting. But and you know, by the way, I just want to mention, you know, Cherie Blair. I've heard stories that she herself actually is very involved in what some people at least would call kind of occult subjects. Have you researched?
She is actually. Yes, I can tell you that firsthand. She is actually. And Tony as well. Tony has experimented. Tony is a man, he's not mentally very stable. Sherry has advisors who are questionable in terms of their abilities and their motives. But certainly Cherry is very into the supernatural, yes, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, hey, listen, let's kind of talk or begin to focus a little bit about the content that was in your article called New World Order Astrologers.
Okay.
I would like to begin, I guess, talk a little bit about, you know, the occult and the use, I guess, also of astrology in regards to World War II. I mean, what seems to be kind of difficult is to kind of, you know, map out, so to speak, how widespread this was.
It was very widespread. Well, let me tell you that the leading churchmen in the Church of England were into the occult and the supernatural was a guy called Archbishop Lang. Now, he was very knowledgeable, and he held quite a lengthy investigation into spiritualism. Unfortunately, the outbreak of the war meant that it was never published, but I have Canon Glendinning's own copy, and it was very favourable. I've had quite a close connection with spiritualism over the years, and sure, you get a lot of frauds and fakes, but there's a lot of sort of genuine comfort that can be given from it. And remember that both the hospice movement and thanatological counselling, after death counselling, owe their inspiration to sort of spiritualists, you know. But also, one of Churchill's main advisors was a guy called Lord Downing, and he was a spiritualist, and he was very knowledgeable on the supernatural as well. But certainly, Churchill was steeped in it. Yes, Churchill had advisors. People like Dennis Wheatley, who wrote several books, very interesting books. They're a little dated now, but they're very, very good books on the occult and World War II. That was Dennis Wheatley. And also, there is a small mention in the MI6 files of the wickedest man in the world, Aleister Crowley.
Sure.
And his connection with Churchill.
Because a lot of people said that Crowley went over to the other side. I mean, he was a spy for a while. He was in Germany and was writing for a newspaper, I think, over there. Have you been able to kind of sort out on which side he was at the end?
I haven't really looked into Crowley, only as a side issue.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that have looked very much into Crowley. I only know that he did experiments on the most haunted place in Britain, which is the Cliff Edge. The name escapes me at the moment, but I did an article on it for one of the magazines recently.
Okay, you're not talking about the Burlesque House or something like that?
No, okay. No. It's the highest cliff in Britain, and a lot of people commit suicide off there.
Okay.
But what, there was a piece there called the Devil's Chimney,
mm-hmm.
where Alistair Crowley did some very sinister experiments during World War II there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, interesting.
But there's a lot of people that claim that Crowley was involved with extraterrestrials.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. I mean, we have this classic depiction of what Crowley called LAM or LAM, and this many people have kind of tied this back to the original image of what we know today commonly, or you know, consensus as the gray alien, basically. Have you seen a picture of this?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, who knows, there might be something there. I don't know, I'm not sure, but let's talk a little bit about the guy that you write about primarily in your article, a guy called Louis Duval. Tell us a little about him, if you will.
Okay, well, what you have to understand is the climate in which he appeared. The ground has to be fertile for the flower to appear. Churchill was encouraging people with occult abilities, and he made his group, sometimes called the Black Group or the
mm-hmm.
Black Team.
Yeah.
They made overtures to several of the most famous occultists of the day. A lot of them refused, but some of them didn't. And there were people who got involved with this. Now, the General Stubblebine, the American general who used supernatural means in the Cold War, he took a lot of his inspiration, and a lot of his paperwork came from Churchill's Black Team.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Have you heard of General Stubblebine?
I have not. Tell us about him.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He wrote a book called Men Who Stare at Goats.
Aha, okay.
What it was certain mental exercises,
sure,
whereby these men would try and kill goats by telepathy and mental willpower. And that was part of their sort of exercises. I have documented people in the Soviet Union who were had their abilities amplified, and they would practice day by day. And sometimes there'd be a team of people, and it's called a battery of wills. Just like if you connect a battery to another battery to another battery, you enhance the power.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a room full of people all willing for something to happen, and some of these guys in the Soviet bloc, they achieved. Wolf Messing was a classic example. He trained a lot of people there during the Cold War to affect change in Western leaders and in Western policy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think you had a guy over there in the UK, I think he's called John Ronson, that actually did a documentary called The Man Who Stared at Goats. Did you ever see that one?
I didn't, but I'm familiar with The Man Who Stared at Goats,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the information surrounding it, but...
So what do you make of stuff like that? Do you personally think that is for real, or is it all a fraud?
Yes, it is. I've seen stuff done in colleges and universities, and provided you know what you're doing. And incidentally, the book by General Stubblebine, it deliberately doesn't tell you how to do it, which I was pleased to see. But and you can achieve an awful lot. There is a very good book called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain by Lynn and somebody Ostrander. That's a very good book. The Soviets were furious with that because that broke a lot of their defense psychic initiatives.
Really?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Going back to Louis Duval again and talking a little bit about him, you said that he was also into... from what I kind of could to take out from the article that you write, it was basically that he was a fraud and kind of a not really into the occult. He was working a lot with film, isn't that correct?
Yes, yeah. Louis Duval, he was not in the same class as Hitler's astrologer at all. Now, there's a lot about this man. He came to Britain under a different name. He came disguised as a Hungarian refugee, and he wasn't. Churchill put him... You see, Churchill would give him a lot of the information that he wanted him to produce the astrological backing for, if you're with me. Now, I'm not trying to say that he wasn't an astrologer, but he wasn't as gifted as some of them that were about at the time. But he was the man in the right place. He was part of a network of people who were very influential. But what Churchill really wanted was someone who would back up his policies. Now, things like there was forged Nostradamus pamphlets that were dropped over Germany, predicting German defeats and that sort of thing. Louis de Waal was behind that. But what is interesting from our point of view was that he went to America and he worked for the Rockefeller Foundation and the CFR, and he was producing stuff for them, primarily for profit.
Really?
So what I mean by that is that there are people who will say, well, look, for the war effort, they're going to be needing X, Y, and Z. If we buy the factories that are producing that, then we can dictate prices and things, are you with me?
Yeah, sure.
So there was quite a bit of that going on.
Interesting. And you mentioned the kind of propaganda war that was going on also at that time. We had a guy called Abraham Gams.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. He was Churchill's poster man, and he would produce a lot of propaganda posters. And the moulding of public opinion, to get men to go to war, you have to tell them that they're under threat. You have to tell them that the enemy are monsters.
Yeah.
When really they're just flesh and blood. They're just human beings, family men, the same as they are. You know?
Yeah.
There's a classic case of this, whereby it is on record that the workers at the Queen's estate at Sandringham, these were land workers during the war. Land workers are always the poorest paid. It doesn't matter to them who's in power, Labour, Conservative or what. It doesn't matter to them because they are on the bottom rung of the economic ladder. Now, they saw that in Hitler's Germany, Hitler had brought in a lot of amenities for the lower paid. And some of these guys, they said, well, you know, it doesn't matter to us whether we're ruled by Berlin or England, because we're still on the bottom of the economic ladder. So what you have to do, you have to change these men's mind frame. So you tell them things like, look, they're going to come across, they're going to rape your women, they're going to bomb everybody. You have to build up this. And all wars are built on racial hatred. And so this is what you have to do. And this is, in fact, what happened.
Interesting.
But there's a classic case of this. All the history books, they will tell you that when the Romans invaded Britain, the ancient Britons, they were savages, and they had all this blue paint called woad and stuff, you know. Well, there are other accounts that says that in Britain there were actually universities at that time. If you look at some of the statements, these are educated men, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people now saying, hey, yup, if these guys were real savages, how come they could negotiate so effectively and so deeply? These are well-educated men. There's the saying that history is written by the politics of the winner. Now, that is so true.
It is.
So true. One of the guys at the Nuremberg war crimes trials, he said, had we won the war, he said, you would be in the dock for your war crimes.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a very young man. I thought, what is this about? What's this man saying? We didn't commit any war crimes. It's only later, when I found out some of the horrific stuff that we did, that I didn't really see any difference between us and them, you know?
Yeah.
We're all sort of human beings. We're all God's children. What surprises me is that the BBC, we still get the films, the propaganda films that were made for World War II and just after II on our TV screens every week. Some of these I feel are very, very bad because they're still whipping up anti-German hatred and stuff like this. And I think, well, this is long gone now. This is wrong.
Do you think it still could be that they need to maintain the idea or kind of justify the idea of what happened during World War II to the people that are alive today?
I think you're right, Hendrik. I think you're right. I think this is what they're trying to do. But the average person now, it's a different world to them. They don't understand. They don't understand what it was all about. And of course, those that were there weren't told the truth.
Mm, yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And this is my main bugbear, that we never told the truth.
No, exactly. Again, it's run by those who have a totally different agenda, and all the people, as you say, at the bottom of this huge pyramid, as it were, is basically just trying to play catch up and just trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And in the meantime, you know, there's a whole different agenda going on at the very top, you know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and people like Gordon Brown, he actually has no power. He is just the figurehead for the money people behind the scenes who dictate to him.
And exactly,
Yeah, and this is part of what I was saying with the Louis de Waal thing. You know, it's the big power brokers. Let me just tell you that Rothschild Bank, right, during the Napoleonic War, the two most powerful, wealthiest nations in the world, Britain and France, we were at war with each other. They were funded by just one bank, Rothschild's bank, funded both sides. You know? And afterwards, he cleaned up, you know, really did. And the same thing happened after the First World War.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it was the situation basically after World War One with the Versailles Treaty and all of that stuff that basically, you know, already back then started World War Two, basically.
Exactly, exactly. You see, if there'd been a fair settlement after World War One, there'd have been no Hitler.
Yeah.
But the banks came in and they stripped Germany bare. They robbed Germany. They said, you were going to pay these colossal sums, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel that was wrong.
And wasn't it actually, I think you wrote about that Neville Chamberlain was one of the guys who had talks with Germany, you know, back then. And they were trying to kind of fix, so to speak, the situation because of how they had been mistreated after World War One.
Well, that's right. Neville Chamberlain, he was reckoned to be the most popular British Prime Minister ever. He came from a family of politicians. You know, he grew up with politics and he understood about balance. And he didn't want, the British people did not want war with Germany. They'd had one war with them during the First World War. Mm-hmm. They didn't want another one. And so Neville Chamberlain, he went and he negotiated, and Britain should have kept out of it. In retrospect now, from many historians now, they're saying that, you know, what had it got to do with Britain that they moved into Poland? Do you know what? Our agreement with Poland, it was against Soviet aggression, not against German aggression.
Hmm. Really?
1950, we had a Grade 1 pact, which is the strongest pact you can have, with Tibet against Chinese aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when the Chinese moved in and committed a genocide in Tibet, there was just a few letters of protest in the Times and we did nothing.
Huh.
Because it didn't suit us to.
Hmm.
Just let me just tell you a little something now. So Anthony Blunt told me, and at the time I wasn't sure, but over the years I found other bits of peripheral information which backs this up, and this is going to shake you.
Mm.
Anthony Blunt, one of the biggest spies of World War II, I didn't like his personal life, but he said to me, he said before the Mayfair debriefing, he said that what happened, he said, was that the Soviets, he said, they murdered the Romanovs. He said they wanted to hear, he said the Tsar was probably the richest man in the world. He said they wanted all the riches. He said the Soviets, he said they murdered the Romanovs.
Mm.
He said the British royal family, he said they were horrified because they could have taken them in, but they didn't want to bring them into Britain because of the weight on the public purse for them alone, yet alone more royals coming in.
Mm.
He said the Queen Mother, who was loved by the British public, he said she was one of the biggest supporters of Hitler because Hitler was one of the only men to stand up against the Soviets. So she secretly supported. And Anthony Blunt said, he said, the reason why they couldn't prosecute me for what I'd done, he said, was because at the end of the war, he said, I went to the ruins of the Chancellery. He said, and I brought back letters of support from the Queen Mother. He said, and he said various artifacts like that. He said, and I kept a little bit back for insurance, and he winked at me. So they couldn't. But the other point, Hendrik, this you've got to think about. When the Germans were bombing London, one of the biggest targets in London was Buckingham Palace, right? But only one stray bomb ever landed in the grounds of Buckingham Palace, right? And the Germans apologised. I thought, that's strange. Wouldn't you have thought they'd have said, right, Buckingham Palace, that's a figurehead there, you know, we'll bomb the shit out of that.
Yeah, exactly. That is the first thing... Yeah, that's the first thing that, you know, you think that they would want to do, basically.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah.
But, you see, they didn't. And you have to sort of say, well, what's going on behind the scenes? And I think Anthony Blunt was probably right. That the royal family did support Hitler.
So what do you think about the Windsors, or I guess we should say the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, their involvement in as the elite? I mean, many people say that, you know, the Rothschilds are kind of the bankers or those who handle the money, but they handle the money for, you know, the royals of the world. What do you think about an idea like that?
Well, my thoughts on the subject go back to the American Revolution, whereby the America was the jewel in Britain's crown. That was wonderful colonies there that had a beautiful future. But what happened was that the Americans, they broke away from Britain. And there was the row with George III. But it wasn't. The real row was with the Bank of England. The Bank of England wanted to tax them very, very heavily. And they wanted to charge them interest on loans. This is usury. This is forbidden in every religion, usury. And it's the only time ever that Christ lost his temper in the Bible and smashed the place up with money changers in the temple. So the real reason Britain lost its colonies was because of the banks. It was the banks of England. And George III was their instrument. He was their puppet. So that was the real reason why we lost our colonies. And what I'm really saying is that it is the banks and the fact that I used to do a lot of student counselling, and the main problem with student counselling is they all owe big money.
They all
have these student debts.
Sure.
And I say to them, for God's sake, don't borrow anymore because you've got to pay it back. But virtually every day, one bank or another will write to a student and say, look, we'll offer you this amount of money, that amount of money.
Yeah. Isn't it that incredible when you actually sit down and think about it? Because what these people are doing is that they're educating themselves in order to serve society through work or whatnot. So, I mean, when you logically think about it, you would think that the government or the interests of the industry or whatever would actually pay, you know, for the education of people.
That's a very sobering thought, that. I'm a bit of an idealist, Hendrik. I have this dream of one day there'll be truth. One day there'll be fair play. One day everybody will get a fair crack of the whip. But how realistic that is, you know, I really don't know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, the first thing, so to speak, we got to deal with is we got to root out many of the things that has been going on in the past, and we got to study history to a certain degree to understand how we have been fooled, basically, and through that we can kind of recognize and learn to see how we are being lied to today, you know, in a way.
Yes, well, I think that's very profound. Yeah, but as I say, they say in intelligence circles that the first casualty of war is truth, and that's so true. It's so true. But remember that the government is at war with its electorate every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day they're trying to mold opinion. They're trying to stop the public from thinking for themselves, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think, if a guy kills somebody, he's immediately up in court. And yet somebody like Tony Blair, he can move into Iraq on his own. He can bomb the country. He can kill over 1 million people and walk away from it with a nice check in his back pocket.
Well, yeah, exactly.
With balance there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and now it's going to be, what, the emperor of the European Union?
Yeah.
Sheesh, I mean, it's incredible. And still, you know, now finally, you know, after, what is it now, 5 years too late, there was finally picked up by the mainstream media the study that was being done by a I can't remember what the, here it is, the Center for Public Integrity, an organization that actually is, have been backed financially by George Soros. When I looked at this quickly at Wikipedia, which is interesting. But anyway, this Center for Public Integrity released their reports on how basically Bush had lied on was it 935 statements that was false going into Iraq, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, and still, you know, so it's like 5 years too late. We're getting this information, and many people, of course, obviously knew this from day one when the lying began, you know.
Yeah.
But here we are. Finally releasing the mainstream media news reports about this. And you know, the question is, okay, so what happens now? Will things go on as usual? And maybe, you know, as the lies on Iran continues, will we be duped into going into that too? You know.
Well, I think you're right. But occasionally there are glimmers of light. There was a guy called, have you heard of Erwin Murtada?
No.
He was an American decorated soldier. He was decorated for bravery. And he said no. He said Iraq is an illegal war. He said it's a war. He said that it's immoral and it's illegal. He said, and I'm not going to take part in it. And the military, they threatened him with everything. But the people took him to heart. And the people have backed him all the way. The people have said, this man is right. And there's a trend in England where there's been over 300 soldiers who joined the army to defend their country, who have said, no, not foreign aggressive wars. You know, we're not going to be involved in terrorism. So there's 300 British soldiers that have deserted, and the public are behind them, but the government wants to prosecute them to the end of the law.
Well, obviously, I mean, if people would begin, that are within the army I'm speaking of now, would begin to recognize that they could do a thing like this, I mean, the whole thing could basically fall apart. I mean, many people have said that, and it's so true, you know. What if they declared a war, but no one showed up, you know?
Yes, yeah. Well, during the Cold War, I believed in the Cold War, and I played a very small part in it. And I was on call, you know, sort of 24 hours. I could have sort of been called in to play a part in it. It was something I believed in at the time, but the Iraq War, I don't believe in. And on our TV sets, we saw the dormitory town of Fallujah being bombed from the sky. And they showed you the American public cheering the bombing of this town. And I thought, you know, these people have been indoctrinated. They've been coerced. They've been mentally persuaded that this is right when it is wrong. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Remember, a very senior man in intelligence, he said to me, he said, yeah, he said, Saddam Hussein is a bastard. He said, but he's our bastard. He said, we put him into power. He said, we funded him. He said, we gave him arms.
Yep.
He said, he is our man in the area.
Exactly.
And a lot of these people out there, they're our people. Well, you know, Britain and America put them into power and funded them. But their usefulness has a shelf life.
Yeah.
When Osama bin Laden was in Afghanistan, when he was fighting the Russians, he was a damn good guy.
Exactly.
But when the political climate changes, exactly as one very senior CIA man said to me, he said, we realized, he said, we'd created a monster. He said, this bloke, he said, we'd been throwing arms at him. He said, here, have these Stinger missiles, have this, have that. He said, the Russians are out there. He said, and we want to move in, and he's saying no. He said, and we've given him all these arms, he says, and he's threatening to fight us.
So, do you think, in regards to what you just said, and if we're talking about Osama there, do you think that he actually, you know, had an interest in going against the U.S. In the end, or was he playing along all the time, you know?
I honestly don't know, but I do believe he's dead. I believe he's been dead for some time.
I think so too, actually.
Yeah. More than that, I wouldn't like to say.
Yeah, he's kind of, again, it's a perfect kind of ghost to play a card. I mean, it's perfect, if you think about it, for the U.S. to not find him also. They can always play this card. I mean, how many years can this go on, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, they can keep producing these videos. And a lot of people now are thinking for themselves. One guy said to me, he said, are you telling me, he said, that this bearded old chap, he said, in this little cave, He said, in the hills of Afghanistan, he said, where there's just sort of dirt and a few camels. He said, are you telling me? He said that he masterminded, he said, from this little cave. He said, the bombing, he said, of the Twin Towers, he said, and he blew all them up. He said, and had all these airliners all flying around. He said, and made the American Air Force stand down, he said, in order to do it. He said, from a primitive little cave in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, you have to sort of say, well, you know, well, what is this? What's going on here?
Yeah.
You know?
Obviously, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's again, it's been disproven, you know, so many times. It's you know, as you say, people are realizing this, but still, this wars kind of goes on. Hey, you know what? I do want to actually take a little break right here now. I think it's a good time to begin to round up this first segment. But I do want to, if you have the time for us, continue talking a little bit more in the subscriber section, because there is a lot more that we actually didn't get to. I would like to talk a little bit more about the Cambridge Five or the Cambridge Apostles, the IRD, Kim Philby, and guys like this, you know. And we could move into talking a little bit more about Helen Duncan, palmistry, and your area of, so to speak.
Sounds good to me, Hendrik.
Definitely. But before we do that, though, I would like to leave the last couple of minutes here to you, so you can mention your website again for people, and I also mention, because I haven't asked you this before, if you have any, do you have any books out there or anything like this on this subject?
I've been pressured to write books for a long time, but because I lecture, a lot of my stuff has appeared in other people's books. So I haven't written any books up here. There's a lot of my articles on the net. The Truth Seeker, co-UK, there's some of my conspiracy articles on that. There's some more on Illuminati News. There's some of my spiritual stuff on Seekers of Spirit, co-UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm regularly on Let's Talk Paranormal. That's an American TV show there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got quite a bit of stuff on there. My main thrust is to obtain truth. I have this dream that one day we'll all have access to truth. One day we will not be manipulated. We will not be mentally coerced into thinking the way that we are told. I think we should all be free to be who we are spiritually, politically, ethnically. Are you with me?
Absolutely.
You know?
Totally. I totally agree. Okay, so let's take a little break right here, and we're going to return, talk more in the subscriber section. But again, the website, the main website for Mr. Stokes.
My website is www.t-stokes.co.uk. That tells you of sort of the bulk of sort of what I do. This is my main thrust of who I am.
Again, don't know where, don't know where, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go,